I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with the second tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search second tier in your podcast app
and hit subscribe.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Yes, the people have spoken and a new era is on the horizon. Andre Villas-Boas is the new president of FC Porto. So we're here to ask how it happened, why it happened, and what's next for one of Europe's super clubs. Welcome to this special edition of On the Continent. I'm Andy Brassel.
I'm the operator.
Yes, over 80% of voters chose AVB in Saturday's election, in which almost 27,000 people voted. A record turnout and one which marked the end of an era. Jorge Nuno Pinto da Costa will be replaced as president of FC Porto after 42 years in charge, a sackload of trophies, four European ones and a Club World Cup. It's been an era that has really defined Portuguese football, but it was a landslide win for AVB, Miguel. Now, Miguel, you're the author of Bring Me That Horizon, a journey to the soul of Portuguese football, and also an FC Porto fan who voted in the election yourself. So why did we get this shock result, and why did people think a change was necessary?
Well, I think it was a surprise for everyone, even for the people who decided to vote for André Villas-Boas, because the magnitude of the historical relevance that Pinto da Costa has in the history of FC Porto and Portuguese football in general was so big. And I think it happened because people really, really wanted to change the situation with the economics of the club, the lack of competitivity in the league. So people were starting to understand that they needed a new prospect for the future. And that prospect would never come from a figure that was already 86, that was connected with a lot of people that had been working around him for the past few years with sometimes dodgy affairs in the middle. And they probably wanted to, they just was waiting for a new person to arrive that represented the ethos of the club, but also was as popular with the supporters as André is, because of course he has been everything at Porto. He has worked as a scout under José Mourinho's tenure. He has been head coach, won some treble in 2011, winning the Europa League, the league, the cup. And of course, he's a well-known Porto supporter since his teens. So he probably matches up and reunited all the necessary conditions for people to trust in him. People believe in the ideas he has brought, and they believe in the people that he surrounded with. And basically, that's the setting point for a new era.
So let's talk a bit about André Villas-Boas' career path to get to this point where he's Porto president. Because it's an extraordinary journey. Someone who had no playing career to speak of, who made contact with Sir Bobby Robson when they lived in the same apartment block. Everyone knows that story, sort of leaving him suggestions in his mail pigeonhole, and then being helped to get onto that coaching course at the Scottish FA. It's an extraordinary path. And when he said in his acceptance speech, I'm going to give my life to FC Porto, he already kind of has, hasn't he? I mean, even when he was still coaching, when he was with Tottenham and when he was with Marseille later on, he talked about how it was his ambition to become Porto president at a later point. And it's a really strange thing to come out with when you're a coach in your 30s, isn't it?
Yeah, he always said it was his destiny more than his fate. He kind of feel that he owed himself the possibility of leading the club. His late great uncle was a player in the first team of Porto back in the 19th century. So you kind of say that he has the DNA all over. And basically all his career as a manager was made because of that mythical year in Porto, only his second job as a professional coach. And he left too early for many. Of course, the money that Chelsea was able to pay for them was quite beneficial for both sides. But in a sense, people expected him to become the new Mourinho, and he wasn't able to. It was a very great heresy to follow. So basically, I think even he himself got tired of management pretty soon for such a talented manager in his first years. And he started to see that Pinto Costa was getting old. There was no figure around him that was able to succeed him, that was consensual with his supporters as well. So he also said in the acceptance speech that since 2015, a group of friends was already told him for himself to be the successor of Pinto da Costa. So I think he has been thinking about this for a long time. And of course, Pinto da Costa is 86 year old now. So probably in his head, he would have been president even sooner. But in life of the late president was still in his heart, and when many expected that he would retire, this he decided to move again. So he thought it was the right move to go against, and it was a brave move because you're fighting against a giant, you're fighting against your own idol, because every single Porto supporter, even if they now voted against Pinto Costa, at least once in their lifetime were a Pinto Costa supporter, hardcore fan. So if you're going to fight against your idol and you're going to win, that's probably even bigger than being president of the club that you love, because it basically gives you the assurance that people really trust you. And he has that trust now to work on for the next 4 years.
And I suppose I want to get a little bit into that impetuous side of Villas-Boas. There's always been quite an impulsive side to his character, hasn't there? I mean, you talked about when he left Porto after winning the treble in 2011. I mean, it felt for me like it was a year too soon. It felt like it was a year too soon from his perspective because he wasn't quite experienced enough. Probably from Porto's perspective, because imagine taking that team into the Champions League with Hulk, Falcao, all of James coming up, and Moutinho, all of those players. And also from Chelsea's perspective, because he wasn't quite ready for the job. But this was, if we're talking about that side of his character, this was a massive undertaking. Because as you said, with Pinto da Costa, it's not just the history and the aura. It's the fact that he had such a huge base of ultra support around him. And maybe that's why it's such a surprise to us that there was this landslide vote for him. Because it always felt as if Pinto da Costa was the favourite, certainly from the outside, going into the election. Because the loudest supporters in the stadium, the Super Dragões, the main ultra group, they were always really behind him. And André Villas-Boas had to put up with some quite intimidating tactics against him while he was undergoing his campaign. I mean, it was not an easy route to victory, was it?
Everything went from bad to worse after the club general assembly back in November, because it was a very tense meeting between club members and some of those elements of the ultra groups, some of them who are now detained in prison waiting for trial. They assaulted some of the club members, with Pinto da Costa just watching from the middle of the arena. And basically, I think that was the turning point. Because Pinto da Costa, if you see the numbers, he got the exact same numbers that he has been getting in every single election he has won. Because usually people wouldn't turn out to vote. Usually people would be voting on the 7,000, 8,000 club members. So basically Pinto would gain his 5,000, 6,000, which was the vote that he had in this one. And those are his ultra followers, the members of the ultra groups, and even some hardcore all-time supporters. What Villas-Boas got was, after that General Assembly, he understood that people, the silent majority, really wanted a change, and people that was never going to vote if there was another candidate, or people that wasn't used to vote altogether, decided to go in mass, because Porto passed from 80,000 supporters that voted in the 2020 election to 26,000. So basically, he personified that need of change, and was brave enough to do it. They knew that anyone would come against Pinto da Costa would have to suffer from the pressure of the ultra groups, would have to suffer from the pressure of some media who are very connected to the club's president. So he had to be a person with extreme bravery, with a very clear mind of what he wanted, and what he was going to be demanded. So basically, that sense that he was also a very brave man when he decided to leave Porto for Chelsea. I agree with you. He should have stayed at least another year, had a team to compete, at least reach the quarterfinals of the Champions League to win the title, because Porto won two titles in a row after he left. So the team was still there and was still able to perform. But that sense of bravery that he always had, that the next challenge I'm going to fight for a new situation I want to explore, going to the Paris-Dakar rally, another passion of his. So he always shown that he's never afraid to take risks. And people really value that, because that's, like I said in the beginning, that was me, Pinto da Costa, what he was. The Villas-Boas of today has very similar traits of Pinto da Costa of the 90s. And people started to see that that resemblance in character was one of the good things that they had to support him, even though he has no experience. And also the way that he decided, since day one, to say, I'm here, I'm going to be your president, things will be done differently. It's not going to be a presidency so focused on me, but I have a good team around me. I want to hire the best, the possible names for every single department the club needs to rebuild himself from within. And people also thought that he has brought a more modern approach to the management of a football club.
And it seemed like there was quite a sort of cordial reaction, I suppose, is maybe a way of describing it. Because it could have been an explosive weekend, really. You had the election on Saturday. You had the Clásico at home to Sporting, the Dragao, Sporting, who are very likely to win the league in the near future, the Dragao on Sunday night. But on the 42nd minute, you had that round of applause and the flares lit by the ultras for Pinto da Costa. Of course, Sergio Conceição led the applause from the touchline. We'll come back to his role in this, the coach, in a little bit. But it felt as if it was, you said to me when we talked about it off mic, a little bit calmer than we expected. I mean, does this endorse the fact that it was the right decision by the fans, and that it sits well with a lot of the fans?
To give you my example, I voted for Villas-Boas, and I never expected him to win, because the cost is so huge in the history of the club and the mindset of the people, that I think there was a lot of people who voted for him who thought, I'm going to vote as a protest. I'm going to vote for him so the club can see that we don't want things to be run the way they are being run over the past few years. We want to change. And if he gets big numbers, if he gets a 40% like, 45%, then it's a wake-up call to Pinto da Costa to move. And I think a lot of people were surprised at the landslide victory that he had. And some people, I think they felt guilty even afterwards, because they said, oh my God, we sent the man away. We really replaced him for a new one. What have we done? And I think in that moment, in that 42 moment, like you said, because of 42 years he has been running president, I think there was a lot of people around me, and I saw people crying around me. So I think there were people who were saying, this is the only guy I ever met as a club chairman. This is the guy that made the club what it is, really. And he has been on his low for quite a while. But everybody also remember the highs. Everybody also remember the European Cup wins, the Champions League wins, the Europa Leagues, the UEFA Cups, the five consecutive leagues that nobody has ever won in Portugal. And all those moments came to life in that round of applause. Villas-Boas was applauding as well. And he has been always very respectful of the figure of Pinto da Costa. He calls him the president of presidents, basically as a seminal figure in the history of the club, which he is. And I think there's a sense of people now, you can say, we have tossed out the greatest president this club's ever had and probably will ever will for you. So you have to deliver now, because we really trusted you and we really endorsed you in such a way that now you cannot fail us.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with the second tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search second tier in your podcast app
and hit subscribe.
So let's talk a bit about where it went wrong with Jorge Nuno Pinto da Costa, because as you said, he created Porto in the modern era. Really, for a lot of people, Portuguese football was just Benfica before, because of the European Cups in the 1960s and the fact that they were the first Portuguese team to, I guess, go international. Whereas Porto under Pinto da Costa did become a huge name associated with Portuguese football. But of course, we don't have a lot of time for nuance in modern football, and we particularly need nuance here, because I think both things can be true, can't they? That he made Porto into what they are as a club today. And at the same time, in the last 10 years, particularly how everything went really badly wrong. Where do you identify the point and how it went wrong, really, for Pinto da Costa? Because we talked about them getting in massive FFP trouble with UEFA. Still, when we talk about Portuguese clubs selling players, certainly in England, people talk about Porto as the kings of selling players, of making transfers. But they really haven't been in recent years, have they? They've fallen a long way behind Benfica in their ability to develop and sell players and manage contractual situations, haven't they?
In the end, it became a victim of the change of times. And when you're in power for so many decades, in the end, the world advances at a rhythm that you can't. So Pinto da Costa was a visionary at the beginning. He was the first club chairman that brought sponsors onto the shirts of the clubs in Portugal. He was a guy that was always on the vanguard. He was connected with the creation of the Champions League, and Porto benefited a lot economically from being the club that was winning the titles when the Champions League appeared, because as we all know, the money that Champions League gave for those clubs in the 90s created dynasties all over Europe. And Porto was just an example. We had Lyon in France. We had Rosenborg in Norway, Panathinaikos in Greece. Of course, the bigger leagues were more balanced, but a lot of the middle leagues really benefited from that, and he was on the vanguard. He was also very keen on selecting young managers that people never heard about and gave them their first opportunities. It happened with Artur Jorge, who won the first European Cup back in the 80s, but also with Mourinho, of course, then Villas-Boas himself. So he was very, very on the line of what was happening with the world. But then he got 70, and a person with 70 years old, I mean, from a country like Portugal, it's hard to adapt to a new world. And what happened, I think it was the world changed drastically to the benefit of the bigger leagues. And leagues like Portugal, like the Netherlands, like Ukraine, was used as middlemen in importing talent, especially from South America, started to see how the Real Madrid, the Manchester City, Man United, Chelsea were starting to sign those players that they were supposed to sign, keep for a couple of years, and then to sell for profit. Vinicius, Hendrick, Savinho, those sort of players would have been signed by Porto 10 years ago. Mm. And now they are directly going for the bigger clubs, for huge money that clubs like Porto, PSV or Shakhtar
or Ajax cannot pay. So basically, you had to have the capacity of adapting to a new world, starting to look for other ways of making money, to be profitable, to be able to compete. And I think he wasn't able to do so. I think he didn't understand the change of time. He was still connected with a very close link of football agents that were bringing worse and worse players as the years went by. And basically, when you get also, that happens with all the monarchies, and basically he was a monarch in himself. When you are so many years in power, you start to lose contact with reality. You start to lose grip with the people. Once you were the guy that spoke for the people, understood the people, and now you are the guy that thinks the people are against you every time they say something that you don't agree. And when you have an ultra group that is so dedicated to you like he had, you felt powerful, you felt protected. He started to add people to his cult that were more interested in making money for themselves than for the success of the club, and people starting to take notice, and those things simply started to accumulate. And then if you have sporting success, that all disappears, because people in football basically want to win and want to celebrate titles and honours. But at the same time, Benfica had a revamp, won 4 leagues in a row, which was very hard to swallow for Porto supporters. And then you enter in a new period of Portuguese football where both Benfica, Porto and Sporting are fighting at the same level, something that didn't exist until Pinto Costa arrived at Porto. Because when he started as club president, he came from an era where Benfica and Sporting were challenging for titles and Porto occasionally were the odd contender. And now we have a time where both Porto, Benfica and Sporting all start from the same position at each year, and that's why you're having Sporting winning 2 leagues in 4 years, Benfica winning 2 leagues in 4 years as well, and Porto as well. So that balance made people be more demanding, and demanding the board to take more quick decisions to solve that situation, especially because they associate him with success. They expect him to deliver success because that's what he was able to do for 3-4 decades. And since he started to fail on all those subjects, it simply accumulated. And then basically what supporters needed was a figure to trust upon, and that figure became Villas-Boas.
So where does this leave Sergio Conceição, the coach? Because we saw him leading the applause from the touchline in the 42nd minute against Sporting. He was given a new contract by Pinto da Costa in the week leading up to the election, which I guess reflected the confidence that Pinto da Costa would continue to a certain extent. But Conceição has been in charge for 7 years now, which is unprecedented, I suppose, in the modern era, particularly of a big team in Portuguese football. From the outside, it looks like he's done a really amazing job under really quite difficult conditions, because of course the summer that he came in 2017, he had to make a load of sales. He's not had anywhere near the sort of squad that, say, Villas-Boas had when he was coach in 2010-2011, and yet he's managed to get his teams 3 Portuguese Liga titles. He's managed to get into the back end of the Champions League, the knockout stage, a few times. Now, I know a lot of Porto fans aren't happy with the sort of football he's played. It's maybe a bit more, he's favoured more physical players rather than technically gifted ones, you could argue. I guess my question with Conceição is, how is he viewed by the fans within the club? Do you think Villas-Boas will really want to continue with him, or do you think he's too associated to the Pinto da Costa era? Because clearly the two of them, Pinto da Costa and Conceição, president and coach, were very close. And do you think that Conceição, to a certain extent, with the results he got, allowed Pinto da Costa to cover up some of his mistakes, certainly to the outside?
That will be the greatest issue that Villas-Boas has to face in the coming weeks. Basically, because Conceição has earned so many support among the fans of the club over the last few years, he became the symbol that Pinto Costa once was. And Pinto Costa was very happy to have a coach that would be a representative of the good old days, and at the same time, a shield to the criticism of fans. So, and Conceição, having a character, also very particular, enjoyed the role. In the press conference after the Sporting match, he called Pinto Costa president and he called Villas-Boas André. So, like a statement of interest, like, my president is Pinto da Costa, this guy is André, is going to be the new president, but I'm still the man who is bossing around here. And he feels that he has the power with a lot of the fans still. even despite the Peter Costa losing, because he believes that people voted against Peter Costa because of the financial issues, because of all the things that we had mentioned before, but not because of him, not because of the way he manages the team, not because of the way a great generation of youth players that won the Champions Youth League has been underused by him, and a lot of the players left the club with only 20, 30 matches with a football shirt of the side. So he still thinks that he can stay as a club manager, even with Villas-Boas, because he feels he has the power with the fans to stay. He has a contract that was signed 2 days before the elections also that has a clause that Villas-Boas can sack him without paying any compensation. At least that's what was told. We haven't seen the contract yet, so we don't know if it's true or not. But the sense is that Villas-Boas has a very conundrum here, because basically Conceição clearly has been Pinto Costa man. He has been since day one, and he represents the values that Pinto Costa has, but he's also very popular with a lot of supporters. So Villas-Boas, we don't know he has a coach, because during the campaign he never mentioned having a coach as alternative. He always said he wanted to sit with Conceição and to speak. But what he has, and what he has said a lot of the times, is a different approach to how football should be played and how the footballing structure of the club should be managed. And that never fits with the idea of Conceição as a manager. So a lot of the people that voted for Villas-Boas are expecting him to sack the manager, or at least not to renew the contract at the end of this season, because he is not compatible with the ideals that he's going to bring, playing more attractive attacking football. Like you said, it's not the template that Conceição uses. Use a lot of players from the under-19 than the B side, because Porto needs to reevaluate a lot of the business they have been doing in the market. So they need to start to get more youth players in the first team. And one of those played the last Clásico and very well, Martin Fernandes, a new right back. So there are a lot of players. Porto was in the final four of the last Youth Champions League this season. But Conceição is a man that never trusts youth that much. So it will be a clash of ideas between the two, and also a clash of characters, because some that voted for Pinto da Costa now have Conceição as their representative in the club. And Villas-Boas is aware of that. He's aware that the manager is still very connected to the old guard, and every success that he has on the pitch may be a vindication of Pinto da Costa as well, maybe a vindication of how things were done in the past. So if he wants to establish himself, and he has an 80% vote in his favor, so he has the power to do so, if he wants to vindicate himself, he has to bring a new manager in. But if that manager fails to deliver, then the responsibility is on him. So he now has the possibility to say, we can keep Conceição for a year, see if it fits our way of doing things, surf the wave of his popularity. And if things fail, then we can say, we tried, but clearly he is the problem, not us. Let's do it our way for the next 3 years. Or he just can scratch and start new. That's probably the question that Porto supporters are asking themselves right now. What is going to happen? Until the end of the season, until the final against Sporting in May, there will be no changes, because Villas-Boas is a very calm man, so he'll not take any step that would put in danger the possibility of winning a trophy this season. But if Porto loses that final and Sergio Conceição enters the season trophyless, then it's very probably unlikely that Villas-Boas could take the opportunity to say, thank you very much for your services, but we're going to start from new, and you don't fit our idea of a football club. So thank you and goodbye.
I mean, I couldn't help but think that the underlining of a new era on what it meant was all in the clothing as well, because when Villas-Boas came out and gave his victory speech, he was wearing the 1987 shirt from the European Cup final. In fact, you were wearing that on Sunday night when you were at the stadium, weren't you? I mean, why were you wearing that? So you were saying, like, this is a new start. We're getting back to glorious Porto, if you like.
It's probably a symbolism for him, and he's wearing the shirt that was worn by the player who scored the goal that gave Porto to the cup, a Brazilian forward named Juari. So it was his shirt given to him a few years ago. And that is very symbolic, because on one side, it represents the first greatest success of Pinto Costa's president on his second tenure as president. And at the same time, it represents the way that Porto began to get notice in Europe, because until that moment, like you said, Portuguese football was all about Benfica. And then that Porto side won the European Cup in 87 and started to become a very familiar side for fans all around the continent. So basically, it's a set of intentions. Let's bring this Porto back. Let's bring the Porto that was innovative, that was forward-thinking, that was a club that was ahead of stuff, not behind, not reacting, but doing things their way. And probably that was the message he wanted to get through the fans. And that clashes with the idea of having Conceição, because, of course, like you said, Conceição has been on his seventh year as Porto coach. With Pinto da Costa, no other manager has been more than 3 years as manager. So he used him as a shield, of course, because, like I said before, you're 86, you're 85, you're 84. You need to go to the market to find a new manager. That's costly. You need to think of the impact that is going to bring. Better to stay with the one that you know, even you know it doesn't deliver the quality that you probably would have demanded 10 years ago, 15 years ago. But you have a figure that's also very popular with the fans, like Simeone, Atletico Madrid, a representation of the ethos of the club. But the thing is, Simeone can do that in Atletico Madrid because Atletico Madrid is not a club that was expected to win. It was a club that was expecting to compete, but the ones we're expecting to win were Real Madrid and Barcelona. But with Porto, it's the other way around. It was Porto was supposed to be the winners and not the underdogs. And Conceição has always taken this 7 years, that underdog approach that could work with the type of players that he had, but didn't work out with the ethos of the club that Pinto Costa created. So if Vilas Boas wants to recover that ethos of we are not the underdogs, we are the front runners, we are the big name on the table, then he cannot have a coach that plays like the underdogs.
So finally, Miguel, when we talk about Vilas Boas and his ability to take it forward, once the dust has settled, once the symbols have been put to one side and he's actually getting on with the work when it comes to the summer and next season, how much of the difficulty that he's going to face in the job is stuff that's been left behind, sort of legacy problems by Pinto da Costa? Because, of course, he's got to sort out the Conceição situation, that's for sure. But also, there are other little economic skeletons in the closet, aren't they? We know that they've been leaking money left and right over the last decade. And, you know, they've not got a huge amount of saleable assets in the playing staff as well. But also there's stuff like, for example, a couple of weeks before the election, Pinto da Costa agreed this deal with a Spanish finance firm to sell 30% of the rights to the commercial rights to the Dragão for the next 25 years for actually quite a low cost. It's a very short-term move. Now, Vilas Boas is going to have to spend some time, presumably, trying to extract himself from that deal as well. Is there a danger that his presidency gets bogged down in sort of untangling a lot of the financial messes that were left behind?
Yeah, and the greatest issue will be to explain the fans that he has a four-year tenure, but he has tasks that will take more than 4 years for sure to get themselves sorted out. And you just mentioned the deal that was signed can be revoked, but in the end, Porto needs to start to make money. Like you said, there are not a lot of players that you can sell at a high profit now on the squad. There's a lot of youth prospects, but they need time to get themselves known by European giants, like you said. So basically, you need a coach that plays them. You need them to deliver. You need them to. You have to wait at least 2 to 3 years for players like that to become recognizable by the market, so you can sell them by a higher price. So during that period, you have to be at least competitive, so the fans don't associate you with defeat or with failure. So it's a very complex situation. But the economic side of Porto right now is the biggest issue, and I think that's why the team that is working on decided to move now. Because probably in a 4-year time, with Pinto Costa let's say, probably not alive anymore. It would be easier for him to compete for the presidency, but at the same time, the situation of the club would be much more dramatic, and it would be more hard to solve. So they started to move on the direction of presenting themselves to the elections this year, because they think they are in a turning point, but the situation is still solvable. But it will take time. The club will need to build a new train academy, but they don't know if they have the resources for that. They have to refurbish the stadium, because despite it's only a 20-year-old stadium built for the year 2004, it's a shambles, really, compared with other stadiums of that level. And also there's a lot of situations regarding the selling of tickets and merchandising with the ultra groups he has to sort out. And that will be very tricky, because they are very loud. It can be very problematic. We have seen now what happened in France when the ultra groups are against the owner. Situation can be messy. So that will be a huge set of dilemmas that he has to work out, at least in a couple, 2 years. And after the first 2 years of his tenure, then he can look back and say, now we can build from here. Those first 2 years will be very difficult, and we'll be able to create the message to the supporters that I cannot deliver results right away, at least not the ones that I want, but I will try. But at the same time, be aware that I am doing stuff that will guarantee our salvation on the long term. But of course, football supporters never think on the long term. They always think at the next match. And he has a good opportunity, because Porto is not playing the Champions League for the following year. It'll be the first time in a couple of seasons. So they're playing the Europa League. Of course, Europa League was the competition that Villas-Boas won when he was a club manager. So I think, looking back to the teams that will play the Europa League next year, knowing that with the new model, there's no transfer from teams from the Champions League anymore. So Porto already know who he's up against you. And you have the Manchester United, probably. You have Atalanta. You have probably Atletico Bilbao. But Porto is among the favourites. So if he can create a team that can compete the Europa League and eventually even win it, you're making a message. You're saying, I'm back to deliver the club when I think it belongs to European royalty. So I think much of the next season will depend on the way that the team will be able to compete in Europe. At the same time, how he's going to sort out all those financial issues that Pinto Costa left behind.
Well, thanks, Miguel. That was absolutely fascinating. And thank you for listening to On the Continent. Make sure you join us again on Thursday for the main show, when I'll be joined by Jonathan Johnson and Lars Sivertsen to react to what's going to be an incredible Champions League week. And remember to subscribe in your podcast app so you never miss an episode.
On the Continent is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
The Championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with the second tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real Championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search second tier in your podcast app
and hit subscribe.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.